Craig said earlier, we're going to kick off a new series this morning. It's going to be a slightly strange series in that we're not going to be doing it every consecutive week, but we're going to cover maybe five or six sort of topics from this subject between now and the end of the year. And the series is based on the Book of Proverbs, and we've got the title on it, Ancient Wisdom for Today's World. And it really doesn't matter very much that it's chopped up, because Proverbs is a bit different from most of the books of the Bible, as we'll sort of discover as we dive into it shortly, in that it doesn't really have a narrative structure in the way that most of the books do. So it's something that actually lends itself to sort of dipping in and grabbing some truth, and then dipping in somewhere else and grabbing some truth, and having some time in between will be absolutely fine. And the reason that we've got this subject, it sort of fits in, you know, our verse for the year, our theme for the year is dwelling on that statement of Jesus's, which was, I've come that you may have life and have it to the full, right? And what does the full look like? A full life look like? That's the question we're asking. Well, Proverbs gives us some insights into what a full life looks like. It tells us how we might be behaving if we've got a full life. So, I'm just going to give an introduction to the book of Proverbs today. But before we do, then let's just sort of step back and think about where this book sits in the Bible. Because I don't know if this sort of picture sort of helps you or not. It helps me, but I kind of think of the books of the Bible a bit like sort of clothes in your bedroom, and if they're all in a jumbled heap at the foot of your bed, then it becomes impossible for you to find that sort of fantastic orange polka dot shirt that you know is just right for the occasion. Whereas if they're all hung up neatly in the wardrobe, then you can go straight to that orange polka dot shirt, because you know that your shirts are in the middle of the wardrobe, your trousers on the left, your jackets on the right, or whatever it is, however you keep your things. And it's the same with the books of the Bible. If they're all neatly on hangers, then you know what to expect when you go to them. Whereas if they're in some kind of like mental intellectual jumble, then you haven't got a clue what to expect. And so the Bible is really quite well structured. Although there's 66 books in it, it's quite well structured. We've got an Old Testament, which sort of, you know, runs up to a few hundred years before Jesus was born. And then we've got a New Testament, which tells us about what happened to Jesus and what happened afterwards. So that kind of break is easy. Well, Proverbs, you find, is in the Old Testament. So we're talking about something here that's quite old, okay? It's actually about 3,000 sort of years old from now. And the Old Testament, again, has got quite a simple structure. It's got a bunch of history books. And the history books take you from Genesis through to Esther. And then it's got some wisdom books, which have sort of got some insights into how we ought to live our life. And they're not really bound to any time or any period in particular. And then we've got major prophets, and they're called major prophets because they're long, not because they're more important. And then we've got a set of minor prophets. Well, if you go and look for Proverbs, so the wisdom books are Job through to Song of Songs, and major prophets are Isaiah to Daniel, and then the minor prophets are Hosea through to Malachi. So if you go and open your Old Testament, you'll find that Proverbs is right in that section called wisdom books. You know what to expect now, right? If you've kind of got that idea of structure, you know you're not going to find stories. You're not going to find things that are linked to specific individuals in a strong way. You're going to find something which is sort of wisdom about our life and how we live it, which is timeless. And that's exactly what you do find. So you're not looking for divine prophecy. You're not looking for stuff like that. Now there are five of these wisdom books. There's Job, Psalms, Proverbs, Ecclesiastes, and Song of Songs, or Song of Solomon, as it's sometimes called. And two of those, the kind of bookends of this section of our Bible, they kind of deal with really specific human experiences. So Job just talks about suffering, and it puts the lie to the idea that people kind of sometimes seem to think that the idea that having a good God linked to suffering in the world is a novel idea. Well, Job is likely to have been the first book in the Bible which was actually written down. And what's it deal with? It deals with a good God and suffering. So that's not a new idea. And then the last of the wisdom books is the Song of Songs, and that's all about love and sexual desire, and shows us that God doesn't hate sex, despite what a lot of people might have the perception of. And the book itself has got some the potential for some, what should we say, some very embarrassing sermons that I certainly would probably struggle to preach. But that's another matter. You go and read it on your own instead of asking me to talk you through it. And then we've got these middle three wisdom books, right? And the way I kind of find it helpful to look at these is right, you know, because classically, I think it was originally the ancient Greeks who described the human in this way. Then we sort of think of ourselves as being body, mind, and spirit, right? That's a, you know, I mean, that's not what you're going to find in a medical textbook, but it's a kind of good way of describing the human machine, if you like, you know, because we've got, there's bits of us, physical parts, arms that move, right? And I've got a sort of a mind that rationalizes things and thinks stuff through, and I've got a spirit that appreciates God, right? So, and there's one of those wisdom books is for each of those. So Psalms is the wisdom book that speaks to the spirit, because it's all about praising and worshiping God. And then Ecclesiastes is the wisdom book that's all about the mind. It rationalizes, what's the meaning of life? Why am I here? You know, what's it all for? Is there any purpose to life, right? So you've got one which deals with the mind, one which deals with the spirit. And Proverbs is the wisdom book that deals with the body. What should I do, right? You know, what do I do with my hands? What do I do with my mouth when I talk, right? What, my physical being, what do I make it do? That's the kind of question that Solomon's trying to address in Proverbs. So it's really, really massively, massively practical. How do I act every day? So let's think what the kind of things that Proverbs might help with us with. Let me give you a completely fictitious example that would never, ever, ever happen in real life, okay? Because I'm a cyclist, and I know that cyclists never do this kind of stuff. But just suppose you're driving your car up the road, and a cyclist hammers through a red light in front of you, and screeches to a halt, and crawls along at about 15 miles an hour, occupying the entire road, and you can't get past him. How do you respond? Right? What about if you're filling in an insurance claim? Okay, and you're filling in this insurance claim, and you get to the question about what was the condition of the stolen item. How honest are you about how scuffed the stolen item was and how it was actually so useless that you were about to replace it anyway? I don't know. That's the kind of question you can find in Proverbs, the answer to that. Or maybe you're out with some work colleagues, right? You're out with your boss, and you're entertaining an important client, and you have a nice meal, and then at the end of it, the client says, let's go to that strip club over there, and your boss says, yeah, you know, they're important clients, let's go with them. How do you react? Right? Proverbs gives us answers to questions like this. Let me just give you some examples, right? We're going to drill into some of these in future weeks. I'll just give you some examples so you can see how you can use Proverbs. So let's think of this impossible situation where a cyclist has been inconsiderate and not followed the rules of the road properly. That never happens. And Proverbs says this, a gentle answer turns away wrath, but a harsh word stirs up anger. Gives you some idea, doesn't it? Now, it's not exactly situation, right? You know, because maybe you weren't actually planning to shout at the cyclist. Maybe you were just going to use your horn or flash your lights at him or whatever it was. But, you know, the parallel is clear. That sometimes harsh words just stir up anger and make a situation worse, whereas a gentle response might be better. So when I do that to you on my bike, then you know how I want you to behave to me. what about the one about the insurance claim? Well, Proverbs says this, don't testify against your neighbor. Your insurance company is your neighbor in this case. Don't testify against your neighbor without cause. Would you use your lips to mislead? Well, I'm about to use a pen to mislead, perhaps. But the parallel is clear, isn't it? It helps us to understand how we should behave. what about the scenario where your client and your boss are suggesting going into the strip club? Well, Proverbs says this, people don't despise a thief if he steals to satisfy his hunger when he's starving. But a man who commits adultery has no sense. Whoever does so destroys himself. That's kind of helpful, isn't it? Maybe you hadn't planned to get physical with the strippers, but I think the parallel is pretty clear. So you can see that, you know, things that happen every day, Proverbs, if you sort of got these ideas in your head, they help you to live as a Christian in a really practical way. So it's a great practical book. So if Proverbs sounds so great, with loads of practical advice on how to live, why don't we read it all the time and preach on it all the time? Because, you know, it sounds fantastic. And there are some problems with it. Now, the first problem isn't really a problem, but it is, if you know what I mean. The first problem is that it's uniquely challenging, right? I'll come back to these in a moment, right? So problem number one, it's really, really, really challenging. Because every time you read something from Proverbs, you find something about yourself in there. Secondly, it hasn't got very much structure. And we preachers, we like structure, don't we? You know, we like the wardrobe with all the hangers in to hang all thoughts off. And there's not much structure in there. The next problem is that it's very generalized. And sometimes it can be quite hard to sort of pull the specifics out, and we'll come to that in a moment. And sometimes people look at it and say, oh, there's just too much ethics and not enough God, right? You know, I go to church to learn about God. So let's look at those one at a time. Objection number one is it's just too challenging. Well, I have to say, that's probably a good thing, because you probably want the reading the Bible for it to change you a bit. And Paul says in the New Testament that all scripture is God-breathed and is profitable for teaching, for reproof, and for correction, and for training in righteousness. So the Bible is supposed to be good for reproof and correction, not just for making us feel happy and good. It is supposed to do that. It's supposed to reprove, correct, and train us. And if we only read nice passages of Scripture, read lovely prayers and upbeat worship and happy promises of blessings and things which tell us how marvelous God is and how great He is and how wonderful He is, then we're missing the point, because the Bible is actually meant to correct us and to reprove us. And I have to say, that's kind of got implications for our teaching, because it's terribly easy as a preacher, you know. You think, well, let's do the nice stuff, you know. I think it sort of talks in the Bible about teachers who tickle the itching ears of the people who are listening to them. And that's a great analogy, isn't it? You know, it's my job, I'm sorry, all right, you can come and hate me for this afterwards, but it's my job to make you feel uncomfortable. Because that's what the Bible does. And Proverbs will make you feel uncomfortable. But then the next issue is this. I said the book's got not much structure, and it hasn't. And it's like a whole load of things that are sort of seemingly haphazardly thrown in together. But actually, when you start to go through it, then you find that there's a whole load of recurring themes that you're getting multiple perspectives on. And rather than the author of the book and the compilers of the book, for example, putting every verse on laziness together in one chapter, you know, and putting the heading at the top, this is laziness, right? And here's all the problems. Rather than doing that, instead, they've scattered the verses on laziness through. So you can kind of get one, and you get a bit of a thought about it. And then while you've reflected on that for half an hour, then you get to the next one about laziness, and you think, oh, there's a bit more to this than I thought previously. And then by the time you've got to the end of the book, you've got all the bits together. That makes it hard to preach on, but it's great when you're reading it. One of the interesting things about Proverbs is this. It's got 31 chapters in it, and there are 31 days of the month. So it actually makes a really good sort of monthly reading. It doesn't work this month because we've got 30 days in September, but normally it works. And if you kind of do it like that, then you'll kind of find those verses on laziness will hit you day after day after day. And at the end of the month, then at least you'll be feeling bad about your laziness, even if you haven't changed anything. And there are themes that come through, adultery and honesty and relationships and how to deal with arguments, what to do about alcohol, gluttony. These are things that just keep on coming back. So the structure can sometimes be quite good, or the lack of structure. But then another comment that people make is that it's very generalized, and it makes wide sweeping statements. For example, Proverbs says this, "The poor are shunned by their neighbors, but the rich have many friends." Now, you look at that and you think, well, I can think of some poor people who are quite popular and some rich people who are quite lonely. And it's not necessarily true all the time. But I don't think that there's any intention for this to be put out there as a 100% true all the time. It's intended to start to make you think. And it's intended to make you start thinking, why is it that people flock around rich people? Perhaps it's because they're looking after their own interests and they think that maybe they'll get some important business contacts off that rich person and make themselves a bit richer, and maybe poor people haven't got anything to offer them. You know, so it's trying to get you to, and then when you start to look at that, then it starts to challenge your own behavior. Do I choose my friends according to how good they are for me? You know, so do you see what I mean about it being challenging? So rather than looking at these and saying, oh, well, that's not always true, throw it in the bin, then look at it and say, no, try to understand what the author is getting at. They're not meant to be read as universal truths. They're meant to give you insight and encourage us to reflect. And that's quite deliberate. Sometimes the generalization is really stark. And the compilers have put a couple of verses together which seem to say completely the opposite thing to make you think. So, for example, we've got in chapter 26 of Proverbs, we've got this. Don't answer a fool according to his folly, or you yourself will be just like him, right? So don't answer a fool according to his folly. So, you know, in other words, just if someone says something really stupid or, you know, got some morally deficient thoughts or whatever it is, then just, like, brush it to one side. The next verse then says, answer a fool according to his folly, or he'll be wise in his own eyes. What do you do? Do you not answer the fool, or do you answer the fool? But the two verses are next to each other. You know, this is not kind of some accident that nobody noticed they were contradicting. What they're trying to say is, look, there are situations where it's appropriate, and there's situations where it's not appropriate. And these are some of the things for you to think about. These are some of the nuances that you need to apply. You need to be wise, right? You need to be wise. This is not a textbook for making us into little automatons which just automatically do what the author of the book says. Instead, it's something which is encouraging us to think and to discern and to apply. And then the final objection that is raised is that there's not enough God. Proverbs is largely based on human reflection, people might say. What has Solomon, who wrote much of it, seen in life that has gone well or badly? And actually, big chunks of it, right now, be prepared to cast me out for being a heretic for suggesting this. But much of Proverbs appears to not actually have originally been part of the Hebrew Bible, because now this is one of the hardest words that I have ever had to say. But there was an ancient Egyptian scribe called Amenemope. That is really hard. And Amenemope, he wrote a lot of Proverbs down about rules for living about 300 years before Solomon lived. And quite a lot of those have wound up in our book of Proverbs. And there's so much overlap between the two that sometimes scholars use Amenemope's work to help them to understand words that they don't quite know the meaning of in the Hebrew. And so they can look at it in the Egyptian text and say, oh, that's what was meant. But that's not a problem. Proverbs has been edited. All of Amenemope's Proverbs don't make it into Proverbs. And there's a lot more besides. It's been edited. It's been extended, and it's been recompiled in a different context. And the context given for the whole of Proverbs is a verse that we'll come to shortly, which is this: the fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge. And so although Proverbs looks like a book of much of it human wisdom, then is all at the base of it all is this: the fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge. Knowledge starts with knowing God. So God underpins it all, and Proverbs shows that God wants us to engage outside our spiritual lives, but in our practical everyday lives, to be living for him. So what we do is as important as what we pray. That's the kind of message of Proverbs. So let's dive into a bit of the book. And we're going to look at the introduction. If you've got your Bibles, then feel free to look at it. If you've got your phones, then you can find it. You can go to BibleGateway.com if you've got a smartphone and you can read it, or you can look at it up on the screen up there. And we're just going to read the first seven verses. Now, just to help you understand, so Proverbs starts with an introduction, the first seven verses, which says why the book is there and what it's written for. And then it goes on to a prologue, and the prologue is a lot of dialogues between a parent and a son, and a lot of people have speculated that it was the conversations that Solomon had himself when he was growing up with his mother Bathsheba. And then after that we get a bunch of Solomon's Proverbs, and then after that we get some other anonymous Proverbs which explicitly say they're not from Solomon, called the Sayings of the Wise, and then we end up with some Proverbs from a couple of people who we know nothing about apart from their names, Agur and the King of Lemuel, and nobody knows who those people were, but that's the sort of structure of it. So the book was mostly written by Solomon, as we find out in this this prologue, the introduction, and but it was compiled later, so putting together Solomon's writing with other people's. This is what it says. The Proverbs of Solomon, son of David, king of Israel, for gaining wisdom and instruction, for understanding words of insight, for receiving instruction in prudent behavior, doing what is right and just and fair, for giving prudence to those who are simple, knowledge and discretion to the young. Let the wise listen and add to their learning, and let the discerning get guidance. For understanding proverbs and parables, the sayings and riddles of the wise. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge, but fools despise wisdom and instruction. So I'm going to take that systematically. We've got seven verses. We're going to quickly skip our way through the seven verses and see what each of them brings to us. So the first verse tells us who wrote this section of the book and who he was. It was Solomon, right? Now, Solomon, you can read about him in the rest of the Bible. He was a hugely successful son of David, who was the second king of Israel after Saul. And when Solomon was first king, he was very young, and God appeared to him in a dream and said, "Ask what you want." And Solomon went back to God and said, "What I would like is a discerning heart to govern your people and to distinguish between right and wrong." And God said, "I like that answer. And because that's what you've asked for, I'm going to give you what you've asked for. But I'm also going to give you wealth and honor as well, because I sort of half expected you to ask for wealth and honor, but you didn't ask for those, so I'll just give you those as a kind of like side bonus." And we know that it's said of Solomon that he spoke 3,000 proverbs, so we've only got a small subset of his proverbs. He spoke 3,000 proverbs, and his songs numbered 1,005, and we've only got one of those, which is the Song of Songs, so goodness knows what the other ones were like, because the Song of Songs is quite a classic, so to speak. So we've just got a small subset of it. So that's the author. And he lived around about 3,000 years ago, give or take, so 50 or 100 years. And we've addressed the other parts of this verse already. We know when I told you when the book was written, but we know what a proverb is. So the proverbs, you know, we've talked about how they're, you know, how they're generalized and how we need to apply them to specific circumstances. So the second verse then. What's Solomon saying that his proverbs are for? He says they are for gaining wisdom and instruction, and for understanding words of insight. That's what proverbs will give you. So Craig starts off talking to us about wisdom. That's what you'll get from proverbs. You won't get a set of direct instructions about how to live your life. You'll get some principles that will give you wisdom to help you to know what's right. It'll give you wisdom, that's the one thing, but it'll also give you instruction. Well, now let's go back to wisdom first. Wisdom is more than knowledge, although wisdom includes knowledge, right? You can't have wisdom in a vacuum. If you've got no knowledge, it's impossible to have wisdom, but it is possible to have knowledge without having wisdom. It is important to know things, both inside and outside the church. You know, I'd always encourage people to take this study seriously, even if you're not formally studying. It's always better to know something than to not know something. I mean, I know there are things that are secret, but as a general rule of thumb, it's better to know things than to not know things, whether that's science or philosophy or theology or geography or whatever it is, it's better to know. But wisdom goes beyond knowing, and it's seeing who God is, seeing how he rules the world, and responding appropriately. So it's using the knowledge that you have in the light of what you know about God to put it into action. So wisdom is about understanding what we ought to do rather than what we do. And I think it was C.S. Lewis who, and this kind of is one of those things that helps you to shape your understanding of the world. And he said, C.S. Lewis said that you, to paraphrase him, you can put what and how together in a sentence as many times as you want to, but you will never make the sentence have the word ought in it. You know, so just describing, you know, like how maths works, or describing how business works, or describing how the human body works or whatever, that tells you what and how. But you'll never get from that to a moral position, which is, well, I ought to do this, right? I should do that. And Proverbs is saying that wisdom is when you know what you ought to do rather than what the art of the possible is. So it's not just wisdom, though. It's also instruction. And instruction is not just simply to me or Jay or Neil or Steve Martin, who's not here, standing up on a Sunday morning and talking about it. It's not just sort of Craig sort of talking in a house group or something. The Hebrew context of instruction includes discipline. In fact, I've got an older version of the NIV here rather than the one that's up there. And when the translators first translated this, then they used the word discipline rather than instruction. And then when they revised the NIV about 10 years later, they obviously changed their mind slightly and switched it to the word to the word that we have up here of instruction. And that's because the Hebrew word's got both ideas, right? And the idea of discipline is really tied into this. And Proverbs is intended to make us wise, but it's also intended to change our behavior. It's not just, instruction sounds like it's just about the mind, whereas discipline makes it sound that it's about the body as well. So Proverbs shouldn't just change the way that you think, it should be changing what you're doing, making you disciplined. So that's what Proverbs is for. But in verse 3, then this extends a little bit more, and it says that it's for receiving instruction in prudent behavior and doing what's right and just and fair. And the first half of this verse almost repeats what's going on before, but do you notice there's an extra little word in there, receive, right? This is about receiving instruction, and there's a big difference, isn't there, right? Because, you know, I can sort of sit and read Proverbs, and my mind can expand a little bit as I know what Solomon said. But when I receive instruction, that's when I actually start to behave differently. So this is so the one thing is about someone being taught, and the other half is someone being willing to learn. Do you get the other side of it, right? And so if we're going to get anything out of Proverbs, when we read it, then we've got to be prepared to actually learn from it and put it into practice. Because if we're not prepared to do that, if we're not prepared to receive that instruction, it's wasted on us. Right? Because Solomon says it's about receiving instruction. And the instruction that we get is doing what's right and just and fair. And, you know, when I said that the fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge, beginning of wisdom, then that's the nub of it, isn't it? Right? So wisdom is about doing what's just and right, and fair. And without putting God at the front of it, then that might actually be doing what's beneficial, useful, profitable, and productive. But we've got a different set of verbs, we've got a different set of words there. And the objective is not to further ourselves, but to do what's right and just and fair. And if you're not interested in doing what's just and right and fair, then don't bother with Proverbs. Because it's not going to tell you how to be successful. It's going to tell you how to do what God wants. Different set of objectives altogether. So we'll take the next two verses together. It says that it's also for giving prudence to those who are simple, knowledge and discretion to the young. Let the wise listen and add to the learning, and let the discerning get guidance. So we found out that so far that Proverbs is all about, you know, kind of giving us insight and knowledge and discipline. And we found out what that is. And now it's like, who needs to listen to it? That's the next thing that Solomon's going on to. Well, he says four groups. He says people who are simple, people who are young, people who are wise, and people who are discerning. That's quite a wide-ranging group of people. Now, taking them one at a time, the simple, maybe it sounds a bit insulting, but that's kind of cultural differences for you. You can't expect, I expect there are some things that we would say that would probably have offended Solomon as well, and it works different ways. We don't like to call people simple, but that's, you know, that's the way it is. And what he means by that is that these are people who haven't yet acquired God's wisdom. Maybe someone who's a new Christian, or maybe someone who's not previously shown any interest in learning. And he's not kind of using this word in a pejorative sense, because after all, if you're there and you don't know much, but you're willing to learn, then that's a good place, right? The bad place is the person who doesn't want to learn, and he talks about them as being fools. So, you know, the simple is not a bad term here. He contrasts later on fools from simple people. Simple people are someone who they just don't know anything yet. The important thing is yet. But also the young, who he kind of puts them together with a simple, not because young people are simple, but because, again, they haven't had time to learn, and Solomon wants to help. And as people grow up, their moral influences come from all sorts of directions. And if we don't focus on imparting God's wisdom, then the other influences will supersede. They'll gain precedence. And that's why it's so fantastic that people like Kerry and Ian are taking kids to Soul Survivor, where you can get some of God's wisdom to counteract or to counterbalance the other influences that we have in the world. So the young and the simple, it's fairly clear why Solomon would want to be writing to them. But he also includes two other groups, the wise and the discerning. And the interesting thing here is that these are people who already know loads about God. So what he's saying is, you might have been a Christian for 50 years, and yet you're still going to learn a shed load of stuff if you read this book. How so? Well, because, you know, it's the classic thing, whatever field it is, the more you know about something, the more you realize there is to know. And the more you know about God, the more you realize that you need to know. And wise and discerning people know that there's no end to learning and will be keen to understand more from Solomon's Proverbs. So basically what Solomon's saying is that unless you're one of his fools, people who've got no time for learning, then he thinks he's got something to say to you. And I suppose for us, the challenge over the rest of the series is, are we going to give him a chance? So he then goes on and talks about what he's going to teach you, or how he says it's for understanding proverbs and parables, the sayings and riddles of the wise. And he's now explaining what his teaching tools are going to be. And he explains now why some of these proverbs sound a little bit odd, because he talks about them as being riddles and parables. You're meant to go away and think about them. They're not intended necessarily to be taken completely at face value, but they're intended to jolt you into thinking. So some of them are parables. They're stories that help us to understand behavior. So, for example, there's a parable about a young man who rather unwisely takes a different route on his normal daily journey and decides to walk past the house of a woman where he knows that her husband is away on business, and he dallies around the gate. Little parable, and I don't need you to imagine where the story ends up. Maybe that's an embellishment of Solomon's own experience of the experience of his own mother and father, and I'm sure that many of you know that story. Some of them are riddles, and you need to chew over them to make sense. The rich and the poor having friends is a good example of that. It's up to you to connect the dots. So to recap, Proverbs is a practical book. It's going to be challenging and painful as we go through it. It contains insight regardless of how many years we've been Christians. It's got no slick answers, but it gives you lots of stuff that requires careful thought and prayerful reflection. But there's one more verse in the introduction. And it's so important that the next bit of the book is a prologue, and at the end of the prologue, this verse is repeated in more or less the same form. And it says this: "The fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge, but fools despise wisdom and instruction." And it contrasts wisdom and foolishness. So foolishness is not bothering with wisdom and instruction. And there's nothing wrong with a bit of, you know, light entertainment now and again. And, but if other things, whatever it is, you know, you're cycling, your Xbox, or your visits to the coffee shop, whatever, if all those other things crowd out completely the development of wisdom and the knowledge of God, then we've got a problem. And Solomon says, you're a fool. He doesn't mince his words. But by contrast, wisdom happens when you fear the Lord and accept instruction. Solomon's challenging us to say, how much time are you spending learning about how you should live as a Christian? And he talks about fearing God, and fear is perhaps an odd word in this context. And we shouldn't be fearing God the way that you might fear. I remember sort of Fluffy, Hagrid's dog in the Harry Potter series, you know, the three-headed dog who's always angry. We shouldn't be fearing God the way that you might fear Fluffy. But when you see who God is, you know, we've talked about sort of Houston and Texas and what's been going on there with Hurricane Harvey. That's just a fraction of God's creation that he made. And you start to realize how big God is. Then you're in awe of him. You know, the most powerful nation on earth can do nothing to stop the weather, which is just something that God made. And realizing God's greatness and our smallness is the first step to wisdom, says Solomon. So, let's close it up. I'd encourage you to read Proverbs before we dive into it properly. I'd encourage you to not sit down and read it in one go, because I think it's too much to bite off in one chunk. I'd encourage you to read it bit by bit, maybe a chapter a day, and to think what you can about that day, and to think what you can about the next day. It'll take you a month if you do it the way that I suggested. And the introduction that we've looked at has asked us what kind of person we want to be. And that's my question for you today. What kind of person do you want to be? And what kind of church do we want to be? Do we want to be the kind of people who are instructed in wisdom? Or is that just too much effort for us? Is it, you know, maybe we've got other priorities in our busy lives. Maybe it's just a bit dull engaging with this stuff. If so, then be honest about it, you know. I hope that's not the case. But Solomon is saying, I don't want you to be like that, because that's foolish, right? Just engage, right? Learn and understand, and then you will get wisdom. But he's also challenging us to not just get wisdom as an academic exercise, but to go out there and practice it, and to put God at the heart of everything that we do.